What is up and welcome. D.C., Maryland, Virginia. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Toby in for GP. I'm Danny Huhay, hanging out with you guys. Bears for Luga joins the show at 3. We got a good one planned for you. It's one of them summer days, Tobes. It's a summer show. But we had some events over the weekend. We had some action. How are you, my friend?
Can't complain. The weekend was good. The baseball watching the Nationals was not good, but enjoying the MLB draft. There's plenty of discussion out of that. Watching some Wizards Summer League. There was at least some stuff going on. This is the portion of the sports calendar when there's absolutely nothing. So I'm kind of glad that the Nationals have something to talk about with the Derby tonight, the All-Star game coming up tomorrow, and the MLB draft should carry us through this week when this is the lightest time where basically nothing's going on.
So you'll hear it in my voice. I don't have a ton of juice in my voice for whatever reason. Just a normal kid yell on Saturday. I was Secretariat, dude. It wasn't even like a crazy, you know, chasing people around, you know, voice cracks, whatever. Just all of a sudden, I yelled at my kids the way you yell at your kids when you have kids. Everyone as a parent understands. Not a McDonald's, we've already been doing whatever this is for 14 hours, and this the last straw that you can't get breakfast after 10:30 type yell that everybody saw. But it was just kind of like a normal thing. And all of a sudden, I just could not talk. So what we're going to do, it's going to be less of me today, probably. What? What the hell is that?
That's pretty rude, honestly.
The audience likes that?
I mean, your name is on the show.
The audience is into that?
That's pretty rude.
Wait, so you're excited about more Toby, less me?
Unbelievable. I'm flattered, but we don't want less Danny.
All right, so Bennett is here today. Yep. Just testing it out. Seems it works. I've seen Strober. Strober's here. And Darius, of course, running the board. He's in charge.
Yeah, that felt like an extra loud pop.
All right, so we'll try to... let me try one more thing. And once again, the star of the show, Danny Ruye. Okay. That's how it is.
That's tough.
That's how it is.
That's tough.
I get the new things more.
It's
exciting.
Pretty rude of the studio audience, honestly, to degrade such a well thought of radio host like Danny Ruye.
Well, let's be honest. Medium thought of. Thank you.
Did he bounce?
Shut up, Danny. Not today. All right.
Danny Ruye.
I love you, Chuck. Miss you, pal. Let's do some more FanDuel ads. Someone could use the cash. Anyway. Yeah. Thanks, Coach. Wizard Summer League. Give me a big 30,000 foot view. Take away your two games.
So Alex Saar on the offensive end hasn't been overly impressive. We saw him be more aggressive in the second half of the first game, which was nice to see. But Danny, on the defensive end, 8 blocks last night.
Is that good?
8 blocks. The thing that I like about Alex Saar is even if his offensive game doesn't develop, which you dream on a guy like that, right? A 7-footer.
I still don't know what he is offensively.
Exactly.
I don't know. And I'm fine with that.
He can do a little bit of everything on the offensive end. We got to figure out what he's good at. Defensively, he is an absolute beast. Absolute beast. I mean, to me, you watch him play and he reminds you of Rudy Gobert on the defensive end. That's a defensive player of the year, and we've seen the career that he's had. Now, I know he's a laughing stock at times on the offensive end, but defensively, he's carved out a great career. He's a max contract type of guy just from his defensive play. So curious to see what he can do in the offensive end. Defensive end look really, really good. The guy that always pops to me is Keyshawn George. I really, really like Keyshawn. He looked good in the first game, struggled a bit in the second game. Trey Johnson is incredibly smooth. I mean, Trey Johnson, just watching him go out there and get buckets, he is the smoothest-looking scorer of the basketball in summer league. And I'm excited to see how he continues to get better. Now, here's the question I have going into the year, because the funny part about watching the Wizards summer league team is you can flip on game one of the regular season, you're going to see basically the same roster. Like, you've got a lot of the same guys playing a lot of major minutes in the summer league that you're going to see in the regular season. I don't know if they have a true point guard. I think they want to put Bub Carrington in that role. I think they want to use him there. I think he can get there. But I don't know if he has the point guard mentality yet, and I don't know if he has the handle yet. If a team just decides to pressure 94 feet the entire time, I think they could be in some trouble. But that being said, you've seen really good flashes from the young guys, which you need to see because, you know, you've got Bub Carrington who played 82 games. You got Alex Saar who played a full season. Keyshawn played a full season. Those guys should look good in the summer league because the other guys they're playing against are college guys.
100%. So, you know, you'll have some help there for Carrington. I mean, you've got a point forward kind of guy in George who came up as a point guard before he got too big. So, but I'm with you, though. And this is growing pains. And here's what should happen, by the way. Second-year players in summer league should be kicking everybody's ass. That's expected. I don't care how someone shoots, but you saw George fill up the stat line, etc. To me, though, my first look at Trey Johnson, yep, this is why we're here. This is why we're here. I don't know how many more games he's going to play. As far as I'm concerned, play him as much or as little as you like. Put him in bubble wrap for the regular season. I'm not saying because he scored 21 points that he's now arrived. I just know that he's above that threshold where if you can't get your looks, you can't get to your spots. Again, it's the Johnny Davis corollary. If you can't, alarm bells should go off. There's very few times, and someone would have to go back in history and find him, where if you're overmatched in that summer league, when it is up and down, it's one step above the N1 mixtape tour in terms of getting shots and getting looks and things. Nobody's scouting, no defensive coordination, no sort of, you know, rotations going well. It's a lot of one-on-one. You got pace and space. You can't get your shot in that, you can't get it. And he can. Oh, my God, is he smooth. I love this kid, Toby. Love.
Yeah, I mean, the move that he had in game one where he gets the pump fake, then throws it off. Was it Maluwach's back ankle there and then gets the ball back, plays a little bit of street ball. There was even a move last night where I'm watching where the guy went toe-to-toe with him. I forget who the defender was, but he kind of had him in a little bit of a – he kind of had him clamped. He was trying to put him in a blender. It went ISO. They were talking about putting the eye in ISO in that move with Trey Johnson, but at least he's able to draw a foul there. Like, I really, really like what you're going to be able to get with him as a scorer. I think it sounded like last night on the broadcast that Will Dawkins was impressed with what he's seen already defensively from Trey Johnson. I think we're going to walk away from this draft and watch Trey Johnson this season and not think twice about missing out on, quote unquote, guys like Ace Bailey that were supposed to be there or whatever. I don't think you're going to look back and say, man, they got screwed with the sixth pick. Yeah, you'd rather have Cooper Flagg. I don't think there's any question, but I think you're going to be just fine with Trey Johnson.
All right, you mentioned the Major League Draft. I actually thought the TV event was pretty good. I liked the way they did the coverage. It was way more analysis, even though they did go to break before Washington.
Yeah,
picked.
Did you watch ESPN or MLB Network?
MLB Network.
Okay, so I was watching MLB Network as well. I don't know if ESPN did it, but you're correct. They hold the first overall pick, and you still go to break right before Washington picks. What the heck? What do you got to do? How in the world?
It's unbelievable. But here we are. I had a smart person that I've known for a long time hit me up about 30 minutes before the draft. And he said, it's going to be Willits. Now, there had been some, as my dad likes to say, there's been some buttelscut before that might be a thing that they liked him. They were high on him. And they were into it, into Willits, the player, not just the other stuff. And we will talk about the other stuff here in a moment. But they liked Willits. He said, this is going to be the pick. And I went, how sure are you? And he's, you know, told me a pretty high percentage. So I was busy with kids. I was on a walk with my 5-month-old, and I didn't tweet it out. Thought about saying, "Hey, I heard from somebody," but yeah, it's one of those things that who cares if I'm right or wrong? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's sure enough, it was Willits. First reaction, and then subsequent pondering. What are your thoughts?
First reaction. So I had the opportunity to potentially tip the pick off, and I was like, I don't really love doing that. So I was like, I'll pass. I just want to see it and get my live reaction just from watching the draft. And watching it, I was hoping that you were going to hear Ethan Holiday. I was maybe expecting that you were going to hear Cade Anderson. But so many people acted like Eli Willits was this massive shocker. And I think for the people that were up on the stage, for the people that were covering it, that aren't day in, day out with the Nationals, were pretty shocked. Being around and hearing some stuff, I wasn't overly shocked that they went with Willits. That being said, I wasn't like, we got our guy when they drafted the dude number one overall. And because I didn't have that reaction, I don't love the pick, Danny. When you draft number one overall, and I get when this team has had number one overall picks in the past, they got lucky in that they were years with Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper. I could have walked the card up there. We all knew. There's nothing difficult about evaluating those guys. You knew those guys are going to be studs. It was different this year. I get that. But if they would have drafted Ethan Holiday, I would have clapped my hands, stood up, cheered, whatever. If they drafted Cade Anderson, I would have tipped my cap. When they drafted Eli Willits, I kind of sat there and said, And that right there is why I don't love the pick. Not to say that it's the wrong pick. We got plenty of time to decide if that's going to be the case or not. I would have gone with Ethan Holiday. It just, to me, when you have the number one overall pick, that's when you don't fool around and try to do extra stuff. And you can see the plan with what they're trying to do. Because if you look at the rest of what they've done the rest of day one, you look at what they've done so far today in the rest of the MLB draft. It looks like they're going to go over slot in rounds 3, round 4, round 5. And you've got some potentially really, really good high school two arms and a bat that potentially could be really, really good. But to me, you take the best player available at number 1 overall, and I'm not fully buying the thing that they're selling, that this was their number 1 on the board. And I would have gone Ethan Holliday because he was at the top of my list.
So when you say what they're trying to do, explain that to folks.
Yeah, so you're given a draft pool, right? You're given X amount of dollars. I don't know exactly what their draft pool is. I'd have to look it up. But you're given X amount of dollars. And so each pick has a slotted amount that you're due or what you're expected to get. And so if you're going out there, you can decide to go multiple ways. You could just keep drafting guys that are going to be valued at the slot that they're taken at, or you can take guys that are quote-unquote underslot, which Eli Willits would be, which their second-round pick would be. And you can save a little bit of cash so that when you draft guys in the third, fourth, and fifth round who are supposed to go to Mississippi State or Mississippi, you have to be able to give them a nice signing bonus to say, hey, don't go to college. Come play for us. Remember, this happened with Travis Sikora a couple of years ago where they took some, I don't know if they really saved because they drafted Dylan Cruz in that draft, so they didn't really have savings, but they were able to take the money that they still had and give it to Sikora, and they walked away with a guy that was potentially going to go to college that decided not to and sign with the Nationals. So you can see the plan there, and if that's their reasoning, Danny, if they're looking at it saying we're going to go under slot with the first overall pick to set up a good draft class, I just can't get on board with that. I'm not going to say, I was thinking about this all day because I've talked about it with Grant already with our Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast and everything. It's not that I hate the pick. It's not that I like the pick. I disagree with the pick because this is a top five guy.
This is an important distinction.
Like, this is a top five dude. This is a guy that would have been gone by, you know, the fifth or sixth
four
pick.
Or five.
Yeah, so like, it's not like they just Anthony Bennett this thing with like the Cavaliers years ago. Like, that's not what happened here, but I would have gone a different direction because I didn't view Willits as the top guy in the draft. And when you have the number one overall pick, I think you have to go with the top guy in the draft. And there's a couple of reasons why too. So people immediately go to long-term, and immediately we're going to have to get to the Scott Boras side of this in a second. I don't want to go there just yet. But to me, we were having this discussion weeks ago. Would you go Anderson? Would you go Holliday? And Willits wasn't really a part of that yet. I would have been fine with either of those guys because the two things that cost money in free agency are power and pitching. Ethan Holliday gives you power. Cade Anderson gives you pitching. Eli Willits gives you neither. Now, to Eli Willits' credit, he gives you the other four tools, but he doesn't give you the power. The other thing that has to go into consideration here, they drafted number one overall this year. They cannot draft any higher than 10th next year. You look back at Dylan Cruz's draft. They drafted second, right? They weren't good enough to, you know, they weren't bad enough or good enough to be drafted 10th, right? But they drafted 10th because that's as high as they could because of the MLB draft lottery. They drafted first this year. They're going to draft at the earliest 10th next year. Okay, well then, why would you then not take the best player available when you only get every other year to be up there at the number one overall pick? And to me, that was Ethan Holliday. And I just don't believe that they looked at it and said, Ethan Holliday is not better than Eli Willits. And if that's the case and they view it, then we're going to have plenty of years to now evaluate whether they were correct or not. But I just didn't see it that way.
It is impossible not to ask questions here. And if this is purely a baseball scouting or analytical, whatever you want to call it, whatever your metrics decision, where they preferred one over the other, that's a good sports discussion, right? What you hope is it's scouts, it's pocket protector guys, it's MIT nerds, and a couple of, you know, old dogs that smell like skull arguing each other about a player. I like Holliday. I like Willits. And if that prevails, that's fine. It's this organization. It is. It's impossible not to ask the questions about money. It's impossible not to ask the questions about Boras, whom you just hinted at, and look at this objectively as a, I like this pick over that pick, right? Does that make sense? So to me, it's not as if I hate the player. I like the player. I mean, again, I'm also not a scout. I'm not out there on the road with a stopwatch and pad and paper. I've seen the same highlights or the same things as you guys. But that's what I don't know. And that uncertainty turns me off on this pick. The safe 1-1 pick, quote-unquote, if there is such a thing, in a year where there's no Bryce Harper, no Strasburg, who you touched on, is what's the home run, for lack of a better pun? What's the guy that if he's on your team is an MVP candidate? Who's got the highest ceiling in this draft? I don't think it's Willits. If they do, great baseball discussion. Impossible to ignore the other stuff. So let's get to the other stuff. What is it? List it out for me. I think it's Porras, right? Impossible to ignore that. And I think it's the underslot signability we can have more elsewhere, which I'm doing at 10. They did that smartly last year when they took Seaver King, took Caleb Lomavita later on in the draft. Fine, you can go over slot. Not at 1-1. That's not pussyfooting time. That's not mess around time. That's the, this is my cornerstone. And if you don't have him for life, you're not going to build a statue of him because he's a Porras guy, then get your 4.5 years of service time and spin him. Or if you're good, God willing, which it looks like whether they will or won't be, who knows what kind of plan they're able to execute. The point is, it is a really valuable asset for you, either in him, the player, or in him, the guy that you trade. You take the best player. And if they don't think it's him, totally fine. Because they're scared from Elijah Green. They're scared from some of the swing and miss. They're scared that, you know, who knows? And they liked Willits better. Fine, but it's impossible not to ask those questions.
Yeah, and to me, the thing that's so interesting about this is both these high school bats, Willits, who they ultimately took, and Ethan Holliday, both of them have professional bloodlines. So Willits' dad played in the bigs for a couple of years. He's a coach at Oklahoma. So, you know, some of the stuff that I'm about to say about Holliday applies to Willits as well. But if I were taking Ethan Holliday, part of the reason that I have some hope in him being the star that we all see the potential that he could have is the fact that his dad is going to be a major part in his development. I talked about this before. It was kind of up and down, whether it was Anderson or whether it was Holliday. And the thing that sold me, Danny, had nothing to do with Ethan. The thing that sold me was Jackson Holliday was scuffling again in April. He's kind of struggled in his big league career. And I don't know what his numbers are now. But I remember hearing from, I think it was maybe the Orioles broadcast or from Jackson or whatever, and he had an incredible month of May. And they asked him, like, hey, what changed? He said, yeah, my dad called down, said, hey, you're doing this, and let's work on trying to do this, or there's whatever it may be. And what do you know? He has an incredible month of May where he's one of the best second basemen in the league. You have that resource along with your development. You have that resource along with it. And I get a guy that could have potential 35, 40 homer power. We're talking about Eli Willits maxing out his power at 20, Danny, and that's being generous?
Yeah.
15, 20?
And that's not who he is, and it's not fair to the kid.
Correct. But, right. I'm not bashing him, but you can't sign a 40-homer bat, Danny. You can't. If they're going to operate the same way that they are, and we have no reason to assume that they're going to change anything, they can't sign an Ethan Holliday. There's a potential down the line they could sign an Eli Willits. I think plain and simple, that's the easiest way to put it.
That's a great way to quantify it. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. What does the Nats drafting of Eli Willits tell us? Baseball nerds unite. Assemble. What does it tell us about the front office? What does it tell us about the learners, the plan? Again, it could just be he's the better player.
Sure.
Totally open to that conversation. But let's have it. 800-636-1067. Remember, Bearish for Luga joins us at 3. We got some rankings. This is ranking season, by the way. We are inside the Adam ranking season. We got one at 325. I got one with quarterbacks we're going to get into. We'll talk some front office rankings as well. Washington, the local football team, is old. So we got some football to come. But right now, it's baseball time. 800-636-1067. The Nats take Eli Willits 1-1. Not a guy that most people had going 1-1, but they took him 1-1. So he went 1-1. What does that say about the organization, State of the Union? Next.
We couldn't be more excited. Eli, he's a special player, you know, great hit tool, makes contact, controls the strike zone. We love his swing, switch hitter, just a clean operation at the plate and, with developing power. So, impact at the plate and then just an elite shortstop, somebody who stays at shortstop, somebody with great range, smooth hands, great arm, accurate. And then you add on top of that, intangibles and confidence and work ethic, maturity that's off the charts. So, you put all that together, it's rare to get someone that we think is the best hitter in the draft and the best fielder in the draft. And so we just felt that was an opportunity we couldn't pass up.
That's the voice of Mike DiBartolo, interim GM of your Washington Nationals. Welcome back. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Toby in for GP. We'll actually check in with GP live from the field for the Home Run Derby. Be in the dugout, setting the scene for us. We'll do that in the 6 o'clock hour. Barry Svalucha joins us at 3 o'clock. Talk about the thing we're talking about right now, basically, at 800-636-1067. So, Tobe, summarize your answer for me here. What does the pick 1-1 of Eli Willett's mean? Kind of give me the state of the union. Do we read more into it, or is it as simple as baseball decided a baseball thing?
Yeah, I think it was something where they decided that they were potentially going to go under slot and that they were going to set up the rest of their draft, and they opted to not go with Ethan Holliday for a number of reasons. One of those reasons probably being that he's repped by Scott Boras. I think that's how you get to where you are last night, and Willett's going 1-1.
So for me, the fact that I'm asking the questions, that's enough. So I had years ago, my dad and I had like a very serious conversation during after a sporting event. I played in a soccer game where I didn't do my best, and there's a million reasons for it. I was tired, and like everything was like stiff and sore, and like I just sort of. And he told me, you know what the word perceive means? Like, yeah, I mean, I know the dictionary definition of it. And he's like, well, that's reality. For everybody watching you out there today, you looked pathetic. You looked like you were and he wasn't saying it to be mean. It was like you didn't look like yourself. You looked like you didn't care. That perception matters. So the perception, based on the deposits in the bank, is that you did this to be cheaper. You did it because you didn't want to deal with Boras.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's fair or not, it might not be, honestly. It might, again, just come down to a great baseball, a baseball decision. But the fact that I'm asking the questions already kind of tells me where the battle is here. And that's sort of my summary, is that this is an organization that's now around the margins instead of kind of playing with the big boys here.
So two things. Number one, the interesting part about this to me is so many Nationals fans on Twitter, a bunch of people have freaked out about it. I've seen a lot of people that are a little more into the draft side are really praising this draft. The question I would have for people that are fully on board with it and, you know, kind of just drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, for the Nationals is, what has changed over there? The only thing that I've seen that's changed is one thing, the guy who's making the decisions. And maybe you see a difference in the way that the draft has been approached and the different ways that they've attacked it. That's fine. What gives you all this confidence now that four high schoolers in the first five rounds are going to be developed to become good big leaguers? That's different from what you were feeling when Mike Rizzo was in charge. They haven't changed everything. Another thing that's crazy about it, I guess three things now, is interim general manager, when you have that on the graphic while the GM is talking after making the number one overall pick, is just wild to me. You have a guy whose future literally means uncertain in interim, and he's making the number one overall selection for you. And then third, I'm curious on your thoughts on this, Danny. Do they make decisions last night because of their thoughts on a timeline of when they could be competitive again? Or do they just make them simply saying, you know, whether we agree or not, Willits is the best player, and then we're going to go from there?
That timeline part of it, I think, is instructive because, and 800-636-1067 is the number. Get your calls here in a moment. What I mean is, a lot of people are going, for example, the interim GM who's trying to prove I can get some positive results here. What's the best way to do that last night?
Cade Anderson,
mm-hmm. Right? I mean, he's fastest to the show. He'll be in a rotation in a year and change, probably, right? You do that, and you look at the dividends. Look what we did. And that's a way to maybe turn some heads and say, look how smart I am. You would think the long-term element of this high school kid going 1-1 who doesn't turn 18 until December shows that, hey, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for the best interest of the organization. This guy's not going to pay dividends for years, right? Mm-hmm. Even if he does everything he's supposed to do. Like, you know, the number of 18, 19-year-olds that are on the show, it's a remarkably small number. Kids are better than they've ever been, but he's still a ways away, and that's not his fault. That's what he should be. So in that way, you kind of go, okay, well, maybe that shows that they're thinking bigger picture, long term. Maybe that's good. But when you add in, that's what Ethan Holliday would have been too. You know what I mean? Without any of the kind of questions that come with it. Let's go to Sean in Falls Church. What do you make of the pick? What does it say about the org?
I kind of think that this is kind of being run, unfortunately, by the learners. I think in an organization where they're not willing to spend currently, and probably for the next bit of the future. I think that this pick is mainly made because of the agent being a Boris client in terms of the Holiday pick, and I think that that would have been the best choice. And you're already seeing it where, you know, Rosenthal or otherwise are talking about how Gore might be a chip to be thrown around in the next couple of weeks when he was supposed to be a linchpin of this team being competitive. And I think that the idea that, you know, this new interim GM is talking, or DeBartolo is, I think it's just more about how this pick can be good and he's not a Boris client and we don't have to spend in the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years and we can just build on potential. Yes, he's 17 and he's going to be decent, but the power is just not there because he's 17. He's a 4-tool player. He could be a 5-tool player. He could be a Holiday, but he's not.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate you. Let's go to Dan in Connecticut. Dan, what does this pick say about the organization?
Hey, guys.
Hey, buddy.
I can give you that answer, but can I also break it down in baseball perspective?
I'll allow it.
Okay. Baseball, I like it in terms of process elimination. I'm glad they didn't draft a pitcher because, you know, their arms can explode any second. And Holiday has my most feared statement attached to him, which is he has a lot of swing and miss in his game. And I covet that hit tool. I love a guy who can understand the strike zone. I can't with another Elijah Green. So I think it's possible that the result is correct, even if the process may have been flawed. Now, going to the conspiracy, Steven Strasburg's deferred money comes off the books in 2029. So maybe if they're angling for a sale or for a time where, you know, everything's cleaned up, we don't have this albatross dead money we have to pay, and we have this young stud who's coming up around that time. I don't know. Maybe that is something that they were considering. So,
Dan, I think so. Appreciate you, dude.
That's an interesting part of it.
No, but like I said this going into the last couple off seasons, and I've been, you know, I don't get any prize for being correct, but the idea, okay, now they're ready, they're going to spend. I said, no, they're not. No, they're not. And when people would say why, I go, they feel like, and it's not like I have direct information. I don't have a line to Mark Lerner or anything. But I go, they think that check where the money comes out of the account counts as payroll to them because that's money being spent. That's Scherzer 15, that's Strasburg 35. Whether it's earmarked for salary cap purposes or luxury tax purposes or first apron purposes to borrow from the NBA, they don't care. That money is coming out of their account. That $35 million, they can't stand it. Now, most teams would go, yeah, you know, that's not your on-field payroll. They don't distinguish. Payroll is payroll, right? The concession stand guy making X, the junior assistant 22-year-old marketing person who's in charge of where one of the presidents goes before the race, that's payroll. It's all coming out of the same account.
So two things. A caller earlier said that Mackenzie Gore could potentially be available. I think it would be completely ridiculous for an interim general manager to have the opportunity to trade away a franchise cornerstone in Mackenzie Gore. In the offseason, if the interim tag is removed, then we can have a more real conversation. But if he's moved at the deadline, which I don't think he will be, but if he were, I think it'd be ridiculous. And another thing off of this, too, Grant reported, he tweeted this out earlier today, about 3 hours ago, saying the Nats didn't even talk with Boris about the price for Ethan Holiday. So I don't love the idea that maybe it was the top guy on their board, and they can say that because Ethan Holiday was never on their board because he was a Boris client. And if that's the case, I don't agree with that philosophy whatsoever.
Let's go to Jay in Reston. Jay, what does the pick say about the organization?
It says we're not real close to being ready to compete. We're, what, 4.5, 5 years into the rebuild? I've been a season ticket holder since day one. We're 4 or 5 years into the rebuild. We are one of the worst teams in baseball, and we're going with draft choices that are coming out of high school. That tells me we're not close to competing.
Jay, appreciate you. Now, it depends on the year. Some guys, the high school kid is the best player on the board, and you know, the Dodgers could take a high school kid 1-1. They'll never pick 1-1 because they're just going to keep winning 100 games. But you know what I mean. But his point in general, I think, actually has some merit here, right, where they're not close. Based on the behavior, they could have been much closer this year. I don't think they'd have been good. I think we overestimate a little bit about how close they actually are. But had they spent $30 million more, you could be an upper 70s win ball club, which is a major step forward for them.
Yeah, I mean, right now they are 20 games under 500, and they need to finish above 500 to beat their mark of 71-91 the rest of the way. But imagine if they were 10 games better or where they are right now, or they were pretty close to approaching that 500 mark. Would you look at saying, okay, they've taken a step forward this year, let's take Cade Anderson so we can add him into the rotation next year and potentially get over the hump? So, yeah, I mean, I think that does play into it some.
Chris, Hyattsville, what does this pick say about the org?
I think it says that the org is planning for the future. You know, they've got now a bevy of shortstops or former shortstops, and including House, Seaver King, and that, you know, now they just drafted Willits. I think this is a plan to safeguard against a possible departure, C.J. Abrams, who honestly is not a very good defensive shortstop anyway. So they're planning for that contingency. But I will say this, like all this criticism, you know, less than 24 hours after a baseball pick is really kind of ludicrous. You go back for the last couple of drafts and look at all the top picks. Very few of them have actually become major league contributors. It's a total crapshoot, and nobody knows better than anyone else. So to say that they missed by not picking Holiday is insane. There's no evidence to support that whatsoever. And there's also no evidence to read into it and say that the learners are somehow behind this. I think this is definitely all DeBartolo and his team, and they're analytics driven, and they are trying to extract the most value for the picks they had.
I hope that's correct. I hope you're right. And by the way, nobody, I don't think anybody's slamming the gavel.
No.
Saying this kid can't play. We have no idea. Cause you're 100% right. Of course. I think it's built in years, no matter what. What I'm addressing, and I want to speak for you, Tobes, is what was the process that led us to it?
Correct.
And that's what I said at the top, Chris, and I appreciate the call as always. If it's what is supposed to happen in every war room in every sport, I like this guy better. I like that guy better. Now we fight. Let's see who wins. The tie-breaking vote goes to the GM. Fine. Done. Great. No problem. My point is, it's impossible to look at the context of everything that's going on. Impossible to look at the last several off seasons, the last set of payrolls, set of circumstances, the owner's lack of involvement not in terms of mismanaging decisions like Dan Snyder, but in terms of being engaged, being unreachable, and being intractable, and going, this feels like thrift store type stuff. This feels like going under slot to then maximize picks elsewhere. If that's the process, I object to that, even if I like the player, which I do.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think we kind of agree here in that in 3 or 4 months when we're past all this, I'm going to be checking Eli Willett's box scores. I'm going to see how he's doing. I can't wait to see what he looks like in spring training next year. I can't wait to follow his path through the minor leagues. It's just more so that if it's the case where they had him as the top player, and he even compared to Holiday, even compared to Anderson, then we just disagree on who was better. You like Jaden Daniels, I like Drake May. Turns out you were correct, and I cheer for Jaden Daniels now, right? Like, I have no issue with that. I'm fine with understanding that I'm not always going to be correct. The other part of it is they're not always going to be correct. I just don't love the process if it truly wasn't, hey, this is the best guy that we think we can get here, and this is who we're going to take. If it was anything else, whether it was the agent, whether it was the draft strategy of going under slot, whatever it may be, then I'm out. If it's just truly best player available, though, and they truly think that Willits is, then I don't know that we'll ever know for sure if that's the case. That's what they're going to tell you. You know, people are tweeting saying, well, he said that. Well, of course he's going to say that. He's not going to say, yeah, he was actually fourth on our board, but we were glad to get him at one because
he's a little cheaper.
We didn't want to deal with Scott Boras. They're never going to say that. But I think it's interesting to see how this plays out, and who knows? Maybe down the line, Willits is the better player than Holiday.
We'll talk to Barrys Fulgham at 3 about kind of the state of the Nats. Third worst record in baseball right now, second worst in the National League, only ahead of the Rockies. Not the company you want to be keeping. We'll do that at 3 o'clock. But next, if you watch one of the great shows available to you, Quarterback on Netflix, you saw our team. Sorry about it. Spoiling things. We'll explain next. G&D here on The Fan. Toby in for GP. Barrys Fulgham joins us at 3. And Grant will actually join us at 6. Live from the ballpark down in Atlanta before the home run derby. And our very own James Wood takes the hit and nukes tonight. Toby, you turn me on to this because you got there before I did. Watching the old quarterback on Netflix. Wasn't that fun? Now.
Oh, it's so fun.
If you haven't watched Quarterback on Netflix, please listen to the show first. When you're done with that, however you're listening, wherever you get your podcast, come hang out with us. Watch Quarterback on Netflix. I love it so much.
Are you a guy that can spread things out and like just watch over days, or are you a binge all at once?
I have to. If before kids, we could do, my wife and I would look at each other, go, another one. We'd go with DJ Khaled on it, another one. One more, you know, before bedtime.
Yeah.
Now I have to spread. I'm a spread. Spread.
Gotcha.
Kids are on the way. Everyone's so tired. You know, it's 28 minutes while I'm working out. 31 minutes before I go to bed, finish up the episode on my phone as I'm getting ready to lay down. I mean, that's my life. The streaming is amazing because I can stop it and pick it up in different outlets. And I'm old enough, Tobes, where it was like, are you in the room with the VCR? No? Then you're boned. That's it. And now it's all right there, which is so incredible to me. Those of us of a certain age, we all know. But anyway, Washington isn't featured. They're going to be in-season Hard Knocks. That's coming, NFC East. But man, were they featured in a way on this quarterback show.
Yeah, it was awesome because you're talking about spreading it out and being able to watch. Danny, I watched, I think, two episodes the first night. I watched this last week. And then the second night, I was like, oh, I'll watch two or three episodes. And then I'm like, I know what's coming at the end of this. Following Jared Goff around, I know it's coming.
I was excited for the previous three episodes leading up to it.
Yeah, I couldn't stop watching. I had to finish it. I was like, you know, it's like way too late. I'm hosting with B. Mitch last week, and it was supposed to, you know, got to get in around 9:30 in the morning, and it's like 1 o'clock, Danny, and I'm like, might need to watch Jaden Daniels outdo Jared Goff, an old quarterback, and I did, and it was glorious. And the best part about quarterback, which is a fantastic series, which followed Joe Burrow, it followed Kirk Cousins, it followed Jared Goff in season two. Awesome. We talked a little bit about Joe Burrow. We'll get back to him in just a second. Interesting character, Joe Burrow, but it was fun to watch week three. You know, we're talking about the Bengals and, man, are they in real trouble? What's going on with them? And, okay, here comes a rookie quarterback and a team that has struggled a little bit early on, but they've got a, you know, a team that wasn't very good last year. Oh, nope. Jaden Daniels just played like Superman. Oh, screw us. And Joe Burrow said as much. And he's like, man, it's hard when you play darn near perfect and lose.
That was narcotics.
Yes.
That was all the carbohydrates. That was a toasted everything bagel with cream cheese, as many as I wanted. Oh, was that perfect? The three moments, and this is not spoiling anything because you saw the football season.
Yeah, if you
need
to just go look at the box scores last year or whatever.
But those three moments when they beat Cincinnati, leaving one of the great players who had one of the great seasons in quarterback history, Joe Burrow, like beyond frustrated, where he's like, what else am I supposed to do? Correct. The Atlanta Falcons game, a little bit less so, because obviously Kirk had already been benched that week or the week before. I think it was the week before, actually.
Week before,
got benched, yeah. And overtime winner, it's featured in there. You can't help but notice it. And then everything leads up to that Detroit game. Oh, dude, was it glorious. It was so great. I will say, normally, it's not that exciting when you leave somebody's spouse in tears. Not this time.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And just hearing the excitement around Detroit, hearing the excitement around the family, and they're thinking, okay, we're going week to week. So when we win this week and get to the NFC Championship, we can plan this. They didn't make it to the NFC Championship, Danny. They didn't make it.
No, they didn't.
It was a shame that they didn't make it, though. It's just really a shame.
So I don't have any animus for Detroit or Detroit fans. I think Detroit has had it rough. I do. I mean that. Like, the city of Detroit, I'm not even doing bits. They, I don't know if it's still true, but for years and years and years in a row, they would have the highest percentage, most number of people leaving Detroit proper of any city in the country. You know, just as been on hard times, things have been bad. Obviously, the Pistons won that rogue championship with Rip Hamilton and a bunch of former Wizards that one year. But other than that, it's not it hadn't been great. Tigers have had a couple of moments, a brief flare-up. If their pitchers could field ground balls, they might have had a World Series. But that, again, just a flare-up, even with great players like Miguel Cabrera and company, whatever. They're good now, but who knows? It's been bad. The Lions were the laughingstock. So I've got buddies who are Detroit fans, and I feel for those guys. But you were in the way, bro. You were in the way.
Yeah, sorry about it.
There was a freight train that had left the station. It's a little bit thin. Smiles a lot. Where's number five? The rest of those guys, you know, give me a little Terry and stuff. But I'm telling you, it was so awesome.
And I love when they show, you know, who they're playing, right? So you're obviously focusing all on Joe Burrow. You're focusing all on Jared Goff. And you get this shot in both of them where it's like the villain shot where the lights are out and the quarterback's warming up. And it's like, Jaden Daniels, Commanders rookie. And then in the playoff game, it's like, Jaden Daniels, Commanders quarterback. It's like, oh yeah, that's the guy that's about to ruin everyone's dreams here.
that's the dream ruiner, that's the guy?
That's the villain right there. The guy that's on our side.
Snatching souls like Shang Tsung, all about it. Super quick before you have Berries for Lugon, I literally just saw this, and I generally don't like to do ADD radio, where something comes across your Twitter and you go, ooh, look at this. But ooh, look at this.
Okay.
Netflix has released the trailer for SEC football, Any Given Sunday. Premieres August 5th.
I can't wait.
Yep. 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 What else do you want for me to say? Yep. You got me. I cannot wait to resubscribe to Netflix. Like, if they're like, hey, Danny, can you give us some money? Sure. Just tell me when and where. As Peter Griffin once said, I can't do the voice because my voice is so banged up today. But Peter Griffin once said, when talking about full body pajamas with butt flaps, that he could just unbutton the butt flaps to use the bathroom and then rebutton them. Here is a blank check, sir. Write down any amount of money and I will pay that.
Yes.
Yes, Netflix. Correct.
Yeah. And I think following the SEC, where it's just diehard, I've never been able to go to an SEC football game in person. It's a bucket list thing for me. I want to be able to witness that environment. Also, I don't know that there's something in our modern sports that we understand less than what's going on in the college game right now. Like, I don't know what's going on. How do you recruit? What's the money like? What? I don't know anything. We used to, but I have no idea what's going on. So this is going to be incredibly intriguing.
That's awesome. I can't wait. I tweeted out at Funny Danny. Toby is Toby underscore Altizer.
Underscore.
That underscore is so key.
If you forget the underscore, you're going to find someone who's suspended. Wasn't me, though.
And it's not Toby. That guy is a filthy wild animal, quite frankly. That other guy. I still think it's your alter ego, but we'll get into that later. Berries for Lugon joins us at 3, Double Play, 3:45, Beltway Blitz at 4, Grant Paulson at 6. We're chock full of goodness here on the Grant and Danny Radio program. Don't go anywhere.